We spend just a few moments this evening in the Old Testament book of Psalms. If you would turn there with me to Psalm 19, one of the most fascinating of all the myriad sections or chapters in the book of Psalms. Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them He has set a tabernacle for the sun, which is like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices like a strong man to run its race. Its rising is from one end of heaven, and its circuit to the other end, and there is nothing hidden from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than a honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse me from secret faults. Keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless, and I shall be innocent of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. You might think, upon first reading, that the psalmist, in this case David, is jumping from one subject to another with reckless and grand abandon. He talks about the majesty of the heavens above us, the grandeur of the earth beneath us. He talks about the sun, which gives us our life. And then he moves from that to what would seem to be a completely different and disparate topic of the Bible, as we know it today, the law of the Lord for his day. He describes it in various words, from law to statute to testimony, in each case speaking of its value, its preciousness, and its strength to change us and help us. And then he moves from that to something that seems to be even less related than these two, to both of them or to each other. Personal responsibility. Asking, pleading with the Lord to help us to understand the wrong we've done, stay away from the exceedingly wrong we might do, and to keep charge of us in watching and helping us with respect to what we think and what we say, so that everything about us might be fully acceptable to Him. And so three very, very separate and separated topics, you might think. The universe made by God, the Bible, the Word of God given to us by Him, and our responsibility. And when I put it that way, it seems like they make a bit more sense coming together, because after all, each leads to the next. The most obvious to see is what you can see with your eyes. Now, we talked a bit this morning about the foolishness of seeing something right in front of you and not being able to recognize it as to what it is. Well, God speaks in language somewhat like that when He says in Psalm 14 and verse 1, "The fool has said within his heart, there is no God." And in case one might miss that, he repeats himself again in Psalm 53 in verse 1. Again, the exact same words begin that chapter, that psalm, as in Psalm 14:1. The fool has said within his heart, there is no God. I heard a man once say, a preacher, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he said that anybody as an atheist that would proclaim the non-existence of God is a double fool. Because this fool at least just keeps it in his heart. This atheist proclaims it, and so he makes himself a double fool. Well, regardless, double or single, it's foolish to consider all the evidence that's overwhelming in God's favor and then walk away with the untenable position that there simply is no God. There can be no God. Evidence is overwhelming. All you have to do is look up. And that's what David does. Somewhat like the mid-portion of Psalms 8 when he says, when I consider the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him? Well, when we look up at everything God has made and we are in awe by the stars that glimmer from above, we have to ask ourselves the question, where did all of this come from and what does it mean? David could see perhaps at best 1,500 to 2,000 stars on a moonlit evening of clear sky in that part of the world for then without any kind of a telescope like we have today. 1,500 to 2,000, that's a big number. And yet just seeing that with what he could see, he uses these wonderful words of inspiration suggesting that all of this reveals the majesty of God. The heavens declare the glory, the majesty of God. And now with our telescopes, we've seen far beyond just 1,500 to 2,000. We've counted and we've counted and we've calibrated and recalibrated. And the truth is, and I don't want to burst anybody's bubble this evening, but most of what we claim to know about the universe at large is more about math than it is about telescopes. Oh, we can see a lot more, and we can count a lot more, but when they talk about there being 17 septillion stars in the skies, that doesn't mean anybody sat down in one, two, and finally after many lifetimes said septillion. Okay, one septillion and one, until you get to 17. They haven't done that. They've taken math and they've extrapolated. And so don't put too much into too much of that. But it is true that we have such a vast expanse of space about us that we realize we're part of the solar system. Our sun is the center and the planets around, of which we are one, revolve. And we as a solar system are one system among not just a few or not just many, but millions and billions of such systems within our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, which is itself just one of not a few or not many, but billions of other galaxies. In fact, those stars that David saw, most of them were not stars at all. They were actually galaxies of stars. Galaxies of stars holding within like ours does. Ours is an average-sized galaxy. Billions of stars themselves. It's just boggling to the mind to consider the size, the sheer size of the universe. And someone without help otherwise, and believe me, we have a lot of help otherwise these days, but with an objective, open mind, he looks up and sees all of that and says, there must be someone behind it all. Because after all, everything of design is given to us by a designer. Everything that's made has a maker. And in this case, as a creation, it must have a creator. And so you see all of that. And it's somewhat like you see a beautiful wooden carved statue and you wonder at the artistry of the person that did that. You never thought, that must have been some lightning strike that left that piece of wood like that in the perfect shape of a noticeable person. You see a beautiful house and you don't think, well, that was quite an earthquake that caused all those things just to come together and form that beautiful mansion. No, you think there was an architect behind it. There are builders behind it. There's a mind behind what I see. And as the writer of Hebrews tells us, so is true. Every house is builded by some man, but he that built all things is God. Well, that's what David is saying here. The heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament shows his handiwork. And the sun is one thing we can most noticeably recognize. If you've done some work in astronomy, perhaps you can look up and from time to time you can see Mars or you can see Venus, but it takes some help to know what you're looking at, to know what you're seeing. But you need no help to recognize and identify the sun. It's about 12 o'clock noon in the middle of July, and you don't mistake it for the moon or for Mars or for Venus. That's the sun. It's the most noticeable thing in our solar system because it's a solar system because of the sun in the middle of it. He speaks of this sun, and then after he says what he says about it as that powerful mechanism that gives us everything physically we have in terms of energy and life and light, having made that point and made it so very well that nobody should be able to misunderstand it. Only a fool would say, well, I see all of that and still no God. Everything came by accident. Nothing is here by design. It's just all one celestial, unknown, mysterious coincidence that we have what we have. Nobody but a fool says that. Well, what about the law God gave? If God gave physically the universe to us, what about the law God gave to those of his own that he's made in his own image? What about his words for mankind? Don't they carry some weight? And the answer is, yes, absolutely, they do. This is where so many of our age, and especially right now in the culture that we live in, which is so very secular, miss the point with respect to God and religion. Saying, well, you believe what you believe, and the other person believes what they believe, and as long as you believe it, that's fine. And keep religion and life separate, very, very separate, so that religion never touches life, whether it's business or politics or education, whatever. Keep religion separate. If you forget the word religion just a moment and think about facts, if God exists, and take that as a premise, if God exists and everything in the universe came because of his power, connect that to the same premise, then bending to his will is not a matter of religion. It's a matter of necessity and fact. If God exists, it's way past just your religious belief one way or the other about it. It either does or does not exist as fact. God's existence is real or it's not. If he does exist, then that permeates every fabric, every part, every bit of our lives, be it religious in a service like this one, or our business as you conduct your affairs day by day, education as our young people are brought to a better understanding of the way the world works. It touches, it permeates, it cuts through everything. And that's David's point. The heavens declare the glory of God. And if there is a God, what about what God has said? It's somewhat like today when we say, have you read the instructions? When you're putting together a project that you bought, or you're trying to put together some kind of apparatus that you have gotten your hands on, and you find, like I often do, that I'm in over my head, and realize after I'm halfway through and have half the screws in the wrong place, well, have I ever taken the chance to look at the directions? And most always I haven't, and most always I have to go back and start over and do it the right way with the instructions. God gave us the universe, and He didn't leave us to our own devices, our own ideas as to how to operate life in this universe. He gave us a set of instructions. His Word. Why do we encourage Bible reading, Bible study, Bible thought, meditation, a mind full of Bible principles? Because all of this from God's Word is that which gives us what we need to get a grip on daily life, to understand how and why life works like it does, to put together good and lasting relationships with others, with friends, with spouses, with family, with business associates. It helps us form governments. It helps us stay civil. It separates us from the animals. And so when you consider everything that God has made and this Word that God has given, then we reflect upon all of that in the context of our place amongst it all. Where are we in the universe? I've mentioned this before, but I have to mention it again because it befuddles my mind to consider it, the fact that we are so small as a planet compared to the rest of the universe as we now know it, that if you compress the size of the universe down to the size of our planet Earth and then comparatively considered our own planet in comparison, size-wise, we would be the size 1/160th the size of an atom. We, as a planet, are not just difficult to find, we're imperceptible. But what about individually you? What about me on this planet? Where do we fit in? Well, in one sense, we don't fit in at all. We're so small. What difference do we make? What does our life count? What matters? In one sense, you're going off quickly into the realm of either existentialism or nihilism, in which you say that there's no purpose or meaning or rhyme or reason to life, and what's the use of anything, until you realize, no, the God who made everything cares about me. I don't know why, but He does. He made me in His own image. I don't know why, but He did. And God has interest in what happens with me. I don't know why, but He does. And He's given me a means by which to have a glimpse and glimmer of His divine will. His Word. And the more I drink deeply of that Word, the more I understand the way God thinks. The more I see the way He expects this universe to really run. And the more He tells me what He wants me to do and to be and to think as a party to this universe, as a part of His world, as His person. And so I, as David, as all of us together would, we consider all of this and we have one request above all else. Search me. You know me better than I know myself. Look within me to my thoughts, my intentions, my motives, and then see what I say and notice what I do, and help me by means of Your Word and by the providence all around me. Help me be the best person I can be. Because when all is said and done, notice once again how this wonderful psalm ends. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. It's interesting how that psalm, as short as it is, ends in much the same way as the much longer and the much more times exasperating book of Ecclesiastes ends. You remember that book of Ecclesiastes, which is a lot of false directive, blind alleys, some rabbit trails you take, and you realize at the end of it, well, that's not the reason we're here. That's not the purpose of life. That's an interesting way to look at it, but that's not what we're here. That's not what life's thought. Under the sun, nothing makes sense. All is vanity. Until finally, at the end of the book, the wise man Solomon says, let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. But what is it? Nothing makes sense. It's fear God and keep His commandments. That's the whole of man, right there, to fear God and keep His commandments. But that's what David's doing here. Solomon's father, David, that's what he's doing here. In one sense, without what God has said, you can see what God has made and see yourself and say, nothing makes sense. I'm just a small, insignificant, inconsequential cog in the wheel of the universe that really means nothing. Until you realize God has spoken. And what He said and what He's done has made all the difference. And I have responsibility before Him to live by what He has said. And when all is said and done, what matters most is not what I want. You notice at the end of Ecclesiastes, it's not about what Solomon wants. In the book of Ecclesiastes, he talks about money. Solomon had a lot of it. Power, he had so much of it as king. Wisdom, he had tremendous wisdom, didn't always live up to it. And yes, Solomon had these things, but he didn't have any purpose to life aside from God. And so when the grand conclusion of the book was reached, it's not about Solomon and what he wants. It's about what God expects and what he owes the Creator. Fear God and keep His commandments. And the same true here. When you consider what God has made and the word He's given and our desire for Him to search us and know us and watch after us and keep us, what is our utmost desire for self? It's not about self at all. He doesn't say, as the psalm ends, give me the heart's desire that I have. Give me everything I want. Make my life a blessing to myself. Give me all the luxuries and trappings of life that make me comfortable and satisfied and at ease. He says, let my heart and my mouth and my life be acceptable to you. That's what matters. And when all is said and done, even though this is one psalm amongst so many in this long book of Psalms, and Psalm is one book in a long list of others in the Old Testament, and that is part of a Bible having a New Testament as well, we have in this one psalm a principle that cuts through every single page of the Bible. And the principle is, we're not here for self. We're here for God. And until we realize that, we'll find no purpose. Without that realization, we have no answers to our questions. And we still have the anxiety and the anxiousness and the angst. But once we let go of ourselves and realize it's not about us, it's about God, the complex things become simple. The anxiety becomes peace, and a life that's impossible to get a handle on becomes a simple matter altogether. That's what the Bible has been trying to have us see all along. Friend, if you're with us tonight and outside of Christ, don't leave in that condition. Or if as a Christian you've wandered away and need to come back, don't leave in that condition, but come and do what you should if you need to, as we stand and sing.